end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. A little bit of a break since our last one. Well, a bit of a break, a week and a bit. But obviously we're in the off-season, so bear with us. We will keep coming to you as much as we can. Joined by both of the lads always this week. Lee, how are you, sir?
Yep, doing really well. Excited to talk some Dolphins, as always.
Exactly. the world may be slowly ending, but we'll still talk some American football.
That's it. We're going to plow on and pretend nothing is happening.
Hear. Si, are you okay, mate?
I'm same as well as Lee at the moment, but I wouldn't want to miss this pod for the world. So I hear getting off my sick bed recording tonight.
Hear. That is commitment to the cause. And like commitment to keeping things normal. I think that's what we've got to do, isn't it? We just got to talk some American football, take people's minds off it, enjoy normal life as we know it. So lots of stuff going on in the Dolphins world, obviously. New coach and stuff here, we touched on that last time. Interviews starting to happen, media appearances starting to look towards free agency. We're going to take things slowly over the next few weeks, just touching on things and hopefully not doing things to death. But we'll kick off with a quick reflection on some of the media work that the new coach and staff are doing. And I think I think you guys have watched it. I haven't had a chance to yet. But Lee, your impressions on the new head coach's sort of first interview with your friend Travis?
Obviously, I'm slightly biased because, like you say, I've been kind of friends with Travis for a while. But, I mean, I think everything they're doing is great. I think it's a great interview. I think there's some kind of in-depth questions. You know my feeling about having a pop at the general NFL media and the sort of standard questions. You know, it's more in-depth than that. And it's amazing how... The difference between Mike McDaniel's answers and Brian Flores' answers, in they're both not really saying a lot, but one's able to do it in a far more interesting and entertaining way than the other. I think he sees that, you know, obviously you don't want to give critical information away, but there's still a way to handle it. And, you know, it's still an important part of the position is the media sort of availabilities. At the end of the day, we know how much pressure the media can pile onto a coach or a team. And I think there's probably a good way to interact. I think I've noticed quite a few times in different interviews that he says, that's a really good question, as if he's never heard it before. And I'm really interested to know if he really hasn't heard it before, or if it's just not what he was expecting because he's expecting the general.
That's a really good question. It's a way that you buy time. Isn't it?
Yes.
That's not like it's the classic.
Right. Oh, I got to think of the answer.
Yeah, I just have a sip of water before I answer. It's that interview technique. It's obviously been trained into him by the 49ers media team. So,
but he definitely feels more open. You feel like you've got something out of it, even if it's just a little tidbit, just a little piece of. I feel a bit smart of having watched this. I feel like I know a bit more about this coaching staff based on something, which I think is great because we know that they were pretty, you know, locked down before. You could kind of write the answers before you ask the questions.
Yeah, there's a bit of energy about it, isn't there? I completely understand why Brian Flores kind of handles media how he does, for sure, because that's his style, isn't it? He kind of gave that aura of being sort of a, you know, hard-nosed, this is my, you know, don't mess with me sort of approach. And McDaniel's are completely the opposite, but for the fan, it's more engaging and more, you know, entertaining. But my one worry is that if we start quite poorly this season, that sort of laughy, jokey sort of way of doing things might rile people. But that's a negative way too early in the podcast. So there we go. Si, your any takeaways, any interesting tidbits that you got from the interview?
A very interesting question, Andy. He's taking a drink. Much like Lee said, I don't think anything significant was given away. But what I did notice was that he and Greer were very much in collaboration and seemed to be on the same wavelength in terms of their answers. No sooner had one given their answer, the other was nodding and backing those answers up. So I think that's a really positive start in terms of those two working closely together.
Awesome. Yeah, that's definitely an important factor, isn't it? Just that relationship, especially as we head into the coming months before we actually play any downs of football. Go on, Lee.
I thought it was interesting as well that when they were touching on kind of free agency and even a draft, I suppose probably the better way to put it is player evaluation, that it seems from what, you know, you can glean from the answers that Mike McDaniel is very, very open to listening to an opinion rather than saying, well, that's what I want. That's my guy. That's what I want. He at least projects that, you know, he's more open-minded and willing to see, oh, hang on, you might see something different to me. Doesn't mean it's good or bad, but, you know, there's definitely, you know, there's more than one way to look at something. And I think it's probably important. And, you know, from everything we've heard in regards to him liking teachers and wanting to, you know, to develop players, that would definitely fit into, you know, into what they were both saying.
100%. And then you've also got Frank Smith's been doing some media as well, hasn't he? I've seen a couple of those clips. And what's really interesting is just how sort of overtly they are committing to the quarterback. Obviously, we had that last year where it was like, you know, they'd say it reluctantly under the 10th question that would be asked sort of as a follow-up. But this time around, it's brought up proactively. It's obviously been underlined by the sort of Dolphins media staff. So, you know, raise the point, make sure we get this across in interviews. And it's quite endearing, isn't it, really? It's like, I don't know about you guys, but for the first time in a long time, you sort of seen some camaraderie on social media and stuff like that. And everyone just seems to be sort of optimistic. So it seems to be going well, and obviously as well as it can when there's no games of football, which is obviously working in their favour. But in the coming months, it's good to have that goodwill with the free agency stuff about to begin.
I think it'd be really interesting as well. We're going to see how much it plays out in regards to how much they trust in their ability to teach, because they're looking at tape of offensive linemen that we're all ready to kick to the curb and go and get completely new guys, where I fully believe that there is going to be a couple of guys there where come free agency and after the draft, we're going, oh my God, I can't believe player X, whoever it might be, is still the guy. Whereas this coaching staff says, actually, we can fix those problems and we can get back to what we, you know, the potential that was seen in the first place. You know, we pointed out before how many offensive linemen especially have A, regressed on the team, and B, been jettisoned only to go and start and play well on other teams. Well, it means there's a good chance that there's players on this team already who can be fixed and play at a very good level. So I think it'd be, you know, really interesting to see it. And again, I could be completely wrong and they just go, all of you are gone, we're getting you guys. But, you know, I think it'd be interesting to see.
The issue with that, though, Lee, is have they really got the time to evaluate and teach and develop prior to, like, the free agency period where all the good O-linemen, they're going to go pretty quickly? Are they going to settle for the next level guys once they've had a better chance to evaluate? So there is that risk there that they ought to consider whilst acknowledging that, yeah, they need to back their own ability to be able to teach, but at what cost?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I get it. I just think I think there's a serious chance that they look back at a couple of the games. They say, all right, Jackson, we can fix this. We've seen the draft tape. We've seen the early game film. We can fix your foot placement issues. We can fix your, you know, how you set up and balance. I don't know. I think it's interesting. It's really easy to come in and say, yeah, it was a clean house, but you're only judging everybody else on their game film unless you go and get exactly the guys you've had before. So, you know, I would hope for all the effort they're putting into evaluating free agents, they're putting that same into evaluating the players that are already on the team, bearing in mind that they've got basically the same information, if not more, because they've got that practice footage.
Yeah, I think they'll I think they'll kind of keep a couple of people that we aren't expecting them to. I think they'll bin some people that we're expecting them to keep. I think it's one of those where they're gonna, that they've got to kind of work with the, you know, work to kind of bring in their guys. And also, I think they do have to prove themselves in a way as that kind of coaches and keep a couple of those guys around and make sure that they, that, you know, that they can show the progression. I don't think they necessarily have to kind of like prove they can do it. But, you know, it's just part of the reason that that these people do what they do is because they're so passionate about developing players. So I think they'll kind of want to because of the challenge it will give them. So it's going to be really interesting to see, isn't it? Because I can see like people being kind of underwhelmed with the work that we do on this offensive line in free agency. I really can. You know, you've got people putting out dream offensive line tweets and stuff with five completely new guys, but guess what? Like the whole of the NFL is going to want the same five guys. It's, you know, and so we're not going to get all of them, are you? So it's just crazy.
And O-line is especially funny. I saw Bills fans tweeting the other day that basically they spend all off season and all we're going to do is fix your O-line. It's going to fix all the problems. And they were like deep in the playoffs. We had a 7-game losing streak and we want to change our whole line. Like, there's going to be some teams out there disappointed because there's not enough O-linemen to go around.
We also had a 7-game winning streak with a suspect O-line as well. So.
Exactly. See, exactly. They might say, see, you won 7 games. Don't need to change anybody.
All good fun. One other quick bit of social media-based stuff that I've seen is that is the tour workouts have started again. So that means that the hype. Yeah, I saw even his trainer sort of going, man, you guys are hyping the first training session back that we've done. It was like, just calm down. So anyway, I saw that tour throwing to Lynn Bowden. So anyone's like fantasy football going, like it's doing my head in already. It's like I've seen like fantasy football Twitter accounts like, go and get Lynn Bowden. He's going to be like the next Deebo Samuel. And just like, just calm down. But then they post these videos of Tua throwing to him. And I'm like, yeah, I'll go and get him anyway. It's fine. So I've gone to get him.
Yeah, I have to admit, I am one of those people, Andy, that has managed to grab Lynn Bowden off waivers in a dynasty league.
Yeah, so you've got to do it, but don't promote it. That's what I'm saying. So we don't promote it here. We're not like that guy. Anyway, sorry, Lee, go on.
Lynn Bowden might be the only guy in the area on the team that wants to do it. Like, it's the off season. I'm sure Devontae Parker, as a vet, has got other things he wants to do, you know, this early in the off season. Like, we're not talking like mid-April. Like, it's just the beginning of March. Look, if you want someone to pick up in fantasy football on the Miami Dolphins, listen to the head coach. Get Jalen Waddle. Give up whatever you have to go and get him because the head coach told you to do it.
Yeah, I have to admit, though, I didn't go and get Bowden on the back of that promotional video. I have to admit.
Don't pretend, Sihan. I saw you giving it a like and a retweet.
Yeah, but just going on that video, if they don't want to get all this social media hype on around the videos, why bother putting it out there in the first place? We know he's going to work his socks off again. He did that last year. We know he's going to do it this year to improve. So why bother with all that social media hype?
Because Tua doesn't put it out. The company training him does. And they need business outside of just Tua. If Tua was to be let go or to be traded or something, do you know what I mean? Like, you still need other people coming in, you know, or down the line when Tua retires in hopefully 15 years time or something. Like, you know, it's all about literally just promoting themselves. I'd love to get the guys, someone from Perform One, because, you know, they know exactly what they're doing when they put something out. They know exactly how, as a fan base, we are going to react positively or negatively.
Interestingly, on that point about trainers in 15 years when people retire, I want to know what Alex Guerrero is going to do now. I mean, imagine that you're this guy who's like, you know, could put his career into like keeping Tom Brady fit and healthy, and then he retires. Like, I wonder if he's got enough money to just kind of call it quits now. But yeah, that's there's an interesting point. Maybe the chap from Perform will be able to do that in 15 years. But, that's possibly.
Hey, next time we're out there, we need to put some video. We need to get some videos done at Perform.
Here.
Sweating. I mean ourselves.
Yeah, ourselves
trying to Lynn Bowden.
Exactly.
Pick you up on waivers any day. So I've just started CrossFit actually, and what I've noticed about CrossFit, it's a bit of a cult. Like everyone's like proper sort of CrossFit changed my life, but I'm just there like this is a good workout, but I don't know, maybe I'm missing something, but there you go, there's a little nugget of information. On the last podcast we did, we kind of touched briefly on sort of whether we'd tag players or trade them or whatever. I just wanted to dig into that a bit more because there's two obvious candidates for sort of a tag in the next couple of weeks, and one of them being Mike Kosicki, one of them being Emmanuel Ogbah. I mean, I'll start off by saying I don't think the Ogbah tag's too likely, especially when you look at the fact that the defensive end position is scheduled to get $17.5 million for if a fat person gets franchise tagged. So probably more about Kosicki this, but I'm just like interested to get your views on whether you think it's the right thing to do, whether you think Kosicki is keen to stay in Miami, whether he's seen enough to kind of exploit his skill set, or whether whether you think that the Dolphins will decide that they can match his production either in free agency or through the draft, or somebody already in the roster maybe in Hunter Long. So Lee, I'll fire it your way first if you're happy to go.
Yeah, I'm happy to go. Would I give him the franchise tag? I mean, I'd be trying to get something sorted out long term instead. You know, but if I had to resort to the franchise tag, yeah. I also don't necessarily believe in tagging players that clearly don't want to be tagged. I just don't think that situation ends well for anyone. I don't think it does them any good in regards to their playing. You know, teams do an awful lot of stuff to make sure players are happy and comfortable. If a guy doesn't want to be tagged, I don't, you know, other than trying to tempt someone into to making an offer to help you get a comp pick, get a pick down the line. Like I don't think I believe in that. If he wants to be a free agent, let him test free agency and then match the offer, better the offer. But I would say if you want him, get the deal done. Get it done. Like you couldn't be in a better position with the most cap space in the NFL going to free agency. Like if he's a priority, there shouldn't be too many barriers to getting it done. As to whether he wants to stay, that's a far more interesting question. If you'd asked me before Brian Flores had been sacked, I would have said, I think I did say on here that I thought he was out the door. Because I think, although he set career highs, his usage wasn't, you know, you felt like he was missing in games, even though the stats say otherwise. And I say his attitude, and that sounds like I'm using it in a negative way, and it's not. But you could see that he was clearly, you know, annoyed at times with a lack of usage. And that he felt that he could be a bigger part of the offense. And let's be honest, at times last year, the offense was you know, a real problem. So it's hard to argue that he was wrong in that instance. But now with a new coaching staff, obviously everything changes. Now, with McDaniel coming from San Francisco and the connection to George Kittle and the tight end school, I mean, to me, this would seem like a great opportunity to work with a coach who knows how to use tight ends and knows how to get the best out of them and use them in multiple ways. I'm not saying he can do what George Kittle does. I think they're different types of tight end, but at the same time, Mike McDaniel is innovative enough to find multiple ways to make sure this guy is a serious part of the offense. You already know that he wants to do that with Jalen Waddle. All of a sudden you've got, you can see key pieces being put into place. So, you know, I'd say if you want to get it done, make sure it gets done. I would like to see it done.
$11 million it would cost on the franchise tag, which is fairly comparable to Kittle in terms of sort of base salary, $11.45 million for Kittle this year as well. So,
has anyone seen the projected contracts? I'll look it up in a minute.
Sorry. The projected tags, yeah.
No. Any projected numbers for him in free agency?
Oh, no, I haven't. No, we can. I'm sure you can look in the background while I flip it sideways. Si, your thoughts, and agree with what Lee's saying, or do you think Kosicki wants out and that should be that?
We've had any indication that either player wants out officially. I'm very much in the same camp as Lee in that let's get them signed, because as fans, you want to keep your best players. And we know that on either side of the ball, when they're on the game, they are two of our top players. So, yeah, you'd love to see them kept. I don't think money is a particular issue because of the amount of cap space that the team has. Having said that, though, I can see them using it as a last resort rather than letting... You don't want to lose them both. So you might have to forego one in favour of the other if you can't come to an agreement on a long-term contract. And as to which one they would choose, it really depends on what their long-term vision is at those particular positions, whether they think they've got the depth at tight end, for example, with somebody who can take the role of Gesicki and the scheme that McDaniel wants to run. Personally, I'd probably lean, if I had to tag one, I'd tag Gesicki, because you hear on social media about, is he a fit for the scheme? Am I giving him a franchise tag? And he plays on that tag. You get 1 year to find that out. Obviously, if it doesn't work, you can move on and you've not committed yourself to a long-term contract in the process. So there is that element to consider as well, I think.
Yeah, I think for me, there's a kind of almost like a fear of missing out with Gesicki as well. I just got a proper fear that if we let it go, I don't know, he ends up on like the Bills and he's got Josh Allen pounding the football. It's just going to be miserable to watch when we all sat here and said this guy could be the future sort of long term, you know, tight end slash dangerous weapon that we always want to be seeing on our team in Aqua and Orange, and it just feels a bit of a risk to me. Sorry, Lee, you're going to give us the figures.
I just saw an article which would actually confirm all your fears that the Jets want to sign him to a deal that's $11 million annually, which would be right in the ballpark of the tag anyway. So if that's the case, you might as well get the deal done. Like, yeah, your risk is the guarantees. But I think there is that bigger question is. And I think it happens more with American football teams than it does over here as such. But it's very rare that you have a player of a good quality that you're happy to see go. I think we're always in that fear that we don't want anyone to leave because they might be good. Like, it doesn't matter if they've never been good, you know, if they've not proven it in the past, they might be good. So we can't let them go. Like, we'd have rosters of 400 because you just can't let anyone go, you know? But I completely get what you're saying.
The difference is that if they come, like, for us over here, if you can guarantee that if you sack off a pretty average striker, for instance, like Lyle Taylor, he will just score a lot of goals when he goes, and it's always the way, and it's always against your club in about the 88th minute. Whereas it doesn't really matter if they score a touchdown against you; it just doesn't feel the same to me. But maybe I'm wrong there. But that's just whether that's Blues or whatever. But every time we get rid of someone, they definitely come back to score against us. You can just see Marcus Bent scoring against Blues for some, I think, Ipswich, just rubbish. But anyway, that's such is life. Anyway, that's how what we move on.
How many goals has Lyle Taylor actually scored?
He scored 3 in 5. He's been absolutely on fire for us, to be fair. He looks like a different player, and he's a proper shithouse as well. He just riles the opposition fans excellently. So he's meant to be a Birmingham City striker. There you go. And same question on Ogba then. I mean, I don't think there's any kind of realisation that we're going to use the tag. I mean, like I say, I think it's a lot of money. But should they be considering it, Lee? Do you think it's, you know, do you think he's such an integral part of that defence that they can't afford to let him go? And if he won't sign the contract, they should consider that?
Again, I wouldn't do it if he doesn't want it. But if you're using it as a reason to extend contract negotiations, but without him actually kind of being free and on the market, and you're going to try and still work towards that actual long-term deal rather than actually paying the franchise tag money, then yes, I can see it as a useful tool to getting it done. But only when both sides are in collaboration, and you know, this is what we want. We just got to kind of, we need more time to hammer out the details. And maybe it's because the Dolphins are saying, like, we need to know what we're doing with everybody else so we know what we've got to play with, and his camp's happy to do that. You know, that sort of scenario, then yeah, I can see a reason to do it. Again, if he's not happy, don't do it. But I mean, you know, his stats while he's been in Miami are pretty consistent. You know what you know what you're paying for. So the question is, do you want that on the team? Like, last 2 years he's had 9 sacks. Like the 2 years he had 25 solo tackles, 26 solo tackles. He's had 6 tackles for a loss, 9 tackles for a loss. Do you know what I mean? Like, the numbers basically bear out that you're going to get what you're paying for. So do you value that at what his camp see his number as? And if so, again, get it done. We're in a beautiful position of having the ability to do that and not being some of, you know, the other teams in the NFL right now that have got cap problems where they're going to have to let players go that they really don't want to let go because, you know, money just can't be sorted and there's just not enough to go around.
That's where his agent would play an important role, isn't it, Lee? If they're in collaboration and are looking to work towards a long-term deal, and even if Ogba wasn't keen himself on having a tag applied, then it's his job of his agent to say, look, we're discussing a contract, we're negotiating. Sure. Let's let them give you the tag so that we can prolong these conversations.
This is part of the process. Also, it guarantees you, if things go really belly up, you're guaranteed to get that money that you if you sign your tag. So,
yeah, exactly. I think that's completely fair. Again, with Ogba, I think with Ogba is one of these sort of, he flies underneath the radar, doesn't he? He's kind of he's like Lee said, he's very consistent in what he turns out, but he also for us has just come up with some real sort of momentum swinging plays as well, and that's where you kind of you don't see it on the stat sheet, do you? But I can't recall like a game where sort of Ogba hasn't been like right in the thick of it, making the big plays that we haven't gone on to sort of win or at least be in with a chance of doing so. So, you know, I think that's where I kind of call into question: is it worth him playing on a tag for a year and just kind of trying to, you know, see how he fits in with this new staff and maybe then getting a two, three-year deal after that. But yeah, it's an interesting one.
It's the batted ball stat, isn't it? That, you know, he was leading the NFL. That always came up in big moments. There's probably a really good argument to say that a young head coach like Mike McDaniel's done a very smart thing in keeping on the defensive staff because he wants to try and, you know, replicate at least at a base level what the defense has done in the last couple of years and build from there. Well, you'd say a big part of that is not losing a star defensive end, you know, because if you can sign him, even if it's not a huge deal, even if it's a 2-year deal, so he can then hit free agency again, maybe that helps with the development of Jalen Phillips. So, you know, you've then got an Emmanuel Ogba and Jalen Phillips when Ogba does move on, and, you know, you kind of continue the cycle. But for a consistency point of view, it probably makes a lot of sense to try and, you know, get that deal done.
Yeah, agreed.
If he gets a 2-year deal now, he's 28, Lee, that'll take him to 30. You can't see him after that getting another long-term deal when he's 30 because he's, in theory, approaching the downside of his career once you hit the wrong side of 30.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the flip side is that you could do something like Ndamukong Suh has done and go like year on year, couldn't you? But sorry, mate.
If you sign a 4-year deal or a 5-year deal, you're hitting it at 32. Do you want to hit free agency at 32 or 30 to try and get another two? You know, I suppose the risk you run is there's a chance this is your last contract, or it's your second to last contract, and that all depends on, you know, such a myriad of factors. Like, I'm not going to pretend to know anything about it or get into it, but it's, you know, it's definitely an interesting proposition. You'd have to be a fly on the wall in some of these meetings and kind of hear the conversations and the sort of the different factors for different players, because obviously it's different for different players at different positions and, you know, different ages and based on players' past health as well. So, but I mean, I'm definitely obviously in favour of getting that deal done.
Good stuff. Right, we'll leave that there. And slightly on the sort of incoming side of things, let's just move on to the sort of areas that we'll discuss in more detail in the coming weeks, the sort of free agent sort of areas we'd like to prioritise, or because, again, if you look at all the mock drafts that are coming out now, you're seeing the Dolphins just being mocked with a receiver or a tackle or a guard or whatever at the back end of the first round every time. And for me, it feels like we'll start there in the fact that those two positions are ones that we're probably most likely to address in free agency. So it might all have changed by the time we come back to the draft, and we could be looking in a completely different way. But Si, are you definitely sort of in on prioritising free agency signings at the O-line position or the receiver position, or is there somewhere else you're looking at?
No, they're the two that immediately spring to mind for me because they're the obvious ones. Obviously, a lot can happen between now and the draft. You know, if they don't approach it in free agency, you know, we can probably guess which way they're going to go in the draft. So as it stands right now, yeah, I definitely favour those two positions. And there are quite a lot of receivers that are going to hit the market this year. So you'd like to think they'll have a chance of finding a couple of gems at least that are going to fit the scheme. Offensive linemen are slightly different, of course. They don't grow on trees. So there are a couple of good ones out there, but they all come with a caveat, of course. So there isn't a perfect O-line out there that you think, yeah, he's a must-have. Okay. So if you can override the caveats, then yeah, go and get them. But other than that, they're the two obvious positions, aren't they, that most fans, I think, would probably consider.
Yeah, for sure. Lee, either of those that kind of your McDaniel and Greer, now you're sat down thinking, you know, if we've got to spend big to improve one position, which of those or are you kind of looking at, or are you looking maybe somewhere slightly different?
I think it has to be a blend of everything. And like, if you're having this conversation next year, it's a completely different conversation based on players in free agency, players in the draft. So it's not as straightforward as, you know, the position A has value A to the team. Do you know what I mean? I would throw running back in there as well, because it's also the sort of area of the draft where you can take the number one running back in the draft. And if you feel that that's a position that, at that stage has slightly more value, where you think these tackles are much of a match and that we could narrow down three or four guys, well, maybe you move up in a second to complete that task and you take the best running back if you believe there's a sort of gap in talent. There's so much to happen first to be able to say. I think it's definitely super interesting. I don't know why. I don't see receivers as higher priority as some other people.
I think, I can see what you say immediately. I've got a feeling that we won't go after one of these alpha receivers that's on the market. You're like, I mean, I've just got the PFF free agent rankings up in front of me. And, you know, the top 10, they've got Devontae Adams, Chris Godwin, right the way through to Allen Robinson in the top 10. I can't see us going after one of those, because I don't think they kind of, it's a bit like I saw someone saying earlier we should trade our first round pick for DK Metcalf, but I don't think those guys are sort of fit to us, sort of what he wants. I mean, I think we're looking for sort of speed and bravery, and bravery is like a very kind of that's a naff way to describe what I mean, but the attribute of taking the ball over the middle of the field, not being afraid to kind of get hit, and then letting yards after the catch doing the talking. And obviously Devontae Adams, I absolutely love it, but I just don't think he kind of get the service that he wanted, and he doesn't really suit to his style. So I think we'll kind of find some bargains there, and it might be a bit like the approach we've seen at running back under the previous staff, where we throw enough mud until some of it finally sticks. But I can also see what you're saying about running back being a priority. I think we might bring in a good, like a higher ranked sort of free agent in, at the running back position. So interesting shout there. Go on, Si.
One thing that did come out of Travis's interview with Coach and Chris Greer was that they admitted that whilst they have got a significant amount of money to spend, they said it does give them that flexibility, but it doesn't mean they're actually going to go ahead and spend it. That's what they indicated there.
You don't have to spend it because you've got it.
Exactly.
I've got a good question for you, Andy. While you've got that list up, where does Juju Smith-Schuster fall on that list?
I mean, I'm down to top 20. He's not come up at all yet. So yeah,
I love Juju Smith-Schuster. I think they should have got that deal done last year when they had him in and decided not to when they couldn't agree. I'd rather have paid him the money they paid Will Fuller. I think he's a better fit. And I know there's going to be loads of people saying, oh, well, that's what Jalen Waddle does. I actually think they've got bigger plans for Jalen Waddle that mean him evolving from what he did last year. Because I think we saw him, you could put him more back in the Alabama role where he's stretching the field rather than solely working underneath. And I think a blend of him and Juju Smith-Schuster means you could interchange them, which makes him a real matchup nightmare on top of Jalen Waddle already being incredibly difficult to cover. I don't know. I really like the fit. And the other wide receiver that I've got interest in, which I know is going to upset Andy, but I'm going to say it anyway, I would be interested to see what Mike McDaniel could do with Cordell Patterson. Based on what he did last year, I could see him playing more of the Deebo Samuel role. Bearing in mind, he's a huge bodied guy, but he can take those handoffs in the backfield. And we saw last year, he's more than capable of running it as, you know, as an effective back, but also can play spread out. And I just think he's probably a better fit body type for that than probably what's already on the roster. I mean, last year, he's under 1 year, $3 million deal. Like, we're not talking about big spends here. I mean, if you talk to me about moving somebody on who's on the roster for that, I think it's probably easy to swap somebody out. Just going back to Juju Smith-Schuster, I think he catches the ball in tight windows a lot, which obviously plays right into Tua's hands. He's got decent yards after the catch ability, which is basically what McDaniel's tried to build. You know, that's the kind of scheme it looks like they're going to try and build, where it's get the ball in playmaker's hands and then let him go play. I don't know. He just seems like a fairly complete receiver, obviously coming off an injury and a poor year. I would have said, had things not been changing in Pittsburgh, I would imagine he would re-sign and try and have a healthy year before kind of hitting free agency, trying to get the money he really wants. But with the quarterback situation there, obviously it depends how that plays out. But I think, you know, right now, I think he's my top free agent at wide receiver for this team.
Yeah, well, I finally found him. He ranks 42nd on the free agency list, and the contract projection that PFF have for him is a 1 year, $8 million sort of prove it deal.
See, for me, it's more fit than like headline signing. I know, yeah, like you say.
No, I agree.
It's not that I think he's better than Devonta Adams. Please don't people come back to me and say that, because it's just really not it. Like, I understand there's better receivers that are available. Just, I think I love the idea of that fit.
Yeah, I think it'd be a great get. I think for Smith-Schuster, he needs to get out of Pittsburgh. I think this kind of, it was all looking rosy, wasn't it? And then Brown went and he didn't maybe live up to the promise that he showed with Brown there. But I think that was kind of, I think he was also consistently producing, but what soured it was that he kind of, the sort of social media aspect of it, everyone sort of, you know, the old dinosaurs saying, I don't like all that sort of stuff. Then that soured the on-field production. People don't recognise that. Still a very productive player.
I said the same thing last year when we talked about this in regards to interviewing him. I couldn't see him as a fit for the Dolphins, because Brian Flores wasn't gonna put up with that sort of player, I don't believe. Whereas I think Mike McDaniel can probably find a way to tell him, look, as long as it's harnessed in the right way, have a blast on social media. Don't dance over teams' logos, because you're potentially causing yourself a competitive problem. But you know, you want to be active on social media. I don't see that being a problem for this coaching staff. I think he's a far better fit now. Whereas I remember sitting on here last year saying, I like Juju Smith-Schuster, I just don't see him being signed by the Dolphins. But it's amazing how 12 months changes everything so much. And I apologize, Simon, because I keep butting in.
That's all right. Keep butting in away. Not a that's not a problem at all, Andy. I take your point about Juju. I think he would be a decent fit. I wasn't convinced that he was as productive as what he was in his rookie year because he had an outstanding rookie year. But after you shared his stats from last year, I'm more than convinced now that if he was to become a Dolphin, he'd do fine in that scheme.
There's a slightly left field one that I've not seen anyone talking about because he's just coming off injury, and that is DJ Chark from the Jags, who I really like. I think he's a very, very good player, sort of underrated again, injured last year, but could have been part of the reason why sort of Lawrence didn't live up to the hype, is because like he was supposedly their number one guy going into the year. Someone like that, I think he'd come into Miami and happily be second or third fiddle to Waddle and be one of those really productive guys. You're getting 60 yards and a touchdown every 3 weeks sort of thing. 60 yards a week and then a touchdown every 3 weeks, and that'd be really kind of helpful. And he's got that speed that you'd kind of get a big play every few games from him. And I think DJ Chark would be a really good sign, and I think we'd be, you know, wouldn't have to pay top money for him. Interesting one there. I like that. But I suppose you could say that about a lot of these guys on the list for sure. But you know, it's exciting, isn't it? Because we could overhaul what a unit that we were quite excited about last year, to be fair to us. We were all kind of hyped going into the season with Parker potentially being as good as we saw when he was working with Fitz and stuff like that. But it just didn't come together, didn't it? And 2 years in a row, we could argue that the receiver position sort of let us down at the end. But when it really mattered at the end of the year.
I think it's universally agreed that it needs work for sure. But I've got to be honest, I just wanted to get it out there that I want Devontae Parker to be a wide receiver on this team. I went back and I was watching some games the other day, watching some highlights and stuff like that. You see some of the catches Devontae Parker makes. My God, he's impressive in short. Like, yes, he's always leaving you wanting more because you always want that. I need the consistency. I need you to stay healthy. But if you can accept that that's not necessarily who he is, but you can bring someone in who is, where I think Juju's been relatively healthy, for instance, bar last year where he had the bad injury. If you could bring in someone healthy, then I think he's a great fit to be on the team still. But I think I see too many people online being almost kind of like moving on already, and I understand that, but I can see ways of supplanting him as wide receiver one on the team, but still having, building a really nice looking unit.
I just want to go back to Chark, actually. I'm just looking up his stats now. And over the 4 years he's been in the NFL, he's not actually completed a full season. Last year, he had that bad injury quite early on. The season before, he only played 13, 15 the year before that, and 11 in his rookie year. So he's not actually played a full season of NFL football yet. Given the situation with Will Fuller last year, do you think they would want to potentially stay away from wide receivers who have got an injury history?
Yeah, I guess it's a good point, but I think you're just so hard to find a receiver. It's probably one of the positions that you just get so many injuries. There's so many potential of different injuries you can get at that position, isn't it? That it's quite hard to find somebody like a Devontae Adams who barely misses time and stuff like that. And that's why those top level consistent guys are so valuable. I mean, you've got other guys that kind of like lesser guys like Jameson Crowder, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I've got in front of me as well. All players that would kind of fit more in the sort of construct the field if needed, but also pick the ball up and make something happen with the ball in their hands as well. But they've all had injuries, so I think you've got to rely on your staff to do the best sort of job of checking them out fitness injury wise, and then paying them accordingly, and not sort of. I mean, the one good thing about Will Fuller is that we didn't sign him to like a 4 year sort of £50 million deal, and only saw him for about 10 minutes of a game this year. Because imagine the kind of backlash. We can move on from him and like, I don't know, 3 years, you'll probably forget he ever played for the Dolphins. So you just got to be sensible with the contracts, and you can say that that Greer has done that before. So
is that until they give him the franchise tag?
If we give him the franchise tag, then we can have a whole podcast of me moaning about that.
Not just you moaning, I think we'd all moan about that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Lee always finds a positive. He'd be there. He'd tell us it was a great move.
I mean, for everything about it, I mean, you've got to feel slightly sorry for the guy after seeing his finger. Like, it wasn't like he didn't. It wasn't like he was sitting at home and could play. Like, yeah, his finger was messed up. That was a nasty injury. But again, because what makes people get more angry and what made the media jump on it even more is because the information that came out at the time was so kind of ambiguous. It was like, he might be back. Like, that guy couldn't have played last year. His finger was sideways. Like, you know. But just say that it's the same as Preston Williams the year before. He's coming back, yeah, but his foot's fallen off. So, you know, once they found it and put it back on, he might come back, but not today.
There's a wide receiver that probably won't play for the Dolphins this year, Preston Williams. So we'll have to see what happens with that. I didn't particularly want to dive into who we're going to sign, so we will not do the same analysis for the guards and tackles, because we will do that in coming weeks. But I think we can all agree that that's an area that we should definitely at least flirt with, sort of in free agency. I'm interested to see what they do with the backup quarterback position, because I think this is going to be really interesting, because as we're all aware, Tua hasn't got through either of his first 2 years without sort of an injury thing. As to whether that was a real injury or a Brian Flores concocted injury, there's a whole another debate to be had. But
there's a podcast in itself.
Yeah, I feel like the backup quarterback position is always important. I think if nothing else, Tua is still at that age where he's developing and probably just needs a sort of peer to discuss things with, rather than always having to kind of be on the same page as the coach and stuff like that. It's to bounce things off people. And so I'll be really interested to see what they do. I mean, again, I don't really want to go into the who it could be, but I'd be interested, Lee, as to for your sort of quick take on whether you think it should be experience that comes in, or you think it should be a rookie or somebody who's kind of like, you know, been on the Dolphins before. Should they even re-sign Jacoby Brissett? What's your immediate thoughts there?
So I actually kind of heading in the other direction. I kind of want a young guy, so he's there isn't that crutch to lean on. He knows how to play quarterback. Like, you drafted him because of the way he played quarterback in college. Like, he knows how to lead a team. And I think that giving him the old hand is an easy out all the time, and it's always easy to defer to that. Like, we want to find out if he's the guy. I think it's, you know, it's sink or swim time. Like, time to get on with it. The one thing I would say when it comes to backup quarterback is, please don't sign somebody who is not a scheme fit with Tua, because it's a huge, huge problem if your quarterback goes down. Not obviously it's a huge problem if your quarterback goes down anyway, but if then the backup can't play the same style of football, I think that's a real problem. And it doesn't mean I want a left-hander necessarily, but I want someone who's comfortable throwing into tight windows, who's comfortable playing with the same kind of players that Tua is comfortable with, because that's who the team's built around. You know, everyone's got an opinion on the quarterback for sure, and there's no right or wrong answer, you know, not from us fans anyway. But he is the quarterback. The team is going to be built around him. You know, we're talking now about players that we want to bring in. There's a reason we just said we haven't said we want to bring in Davante Adams, is because we think there's better fits for our quarterback, because even we look at it that way. And I think the quarterback position, the backup quarterback position, has to be treated the same way, because, like you say, he has a history of missing games. And if that's the case, the team needs to be able to continue as close to as normal as possible. There's going to be a drop-off in performance. Backup quarterbacks are backups for a reason, because they can't get starting jobs. But it felt like there was too much of a conflict in style with Jacoby Brissett last year. And I just wouldn't like to see that again. Sorry.
All right. I want to pick up on something you said, Andy. You said, would he benefit from a peer? Which is very different from saying, would he, or asking, would he benefit from a mentor? Exactly what Lee said. You don't want that Ryan Fitzpatrick now, because this is Tua's third year. As Lee said, he knows what he's doing now. So you don't need that mentor anymore. You need a peer. Somebody who you can relate to, who is in that similar style, knows how you play. You'd like to think, as Lee said, they're bringing somebody on board who can just slot in there if in the unfortunate event Tua went. So having that peer that you can easily relate to, I think, is now more important than having a mentor.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think the flip argument, which I'm not necessarily bought in on, is that, well, it's not really an argument, but my worry would be that we'd kind of, if we drafted someone who we thought was good enough to be a backup in the, like, I don't know, pick around fourth round, you're still going to get sort of, I mean, it doesn't matter, does it? But like half of Dolphins Twitter, as soon as it went wrong, like it would just be kind of throw X in and off you go. And that would just start. I mean, I think you could get that anyway. That's why I wonder if you sign somebody who's obviously not starting caliber, but can throw the ball 10 yards. And I, for some reason, the only person that's in my head is Brian Hoyer. But like somebody like that, who's obviously not there to take the job, but is competent enough to kind of come in and game manage if he has to. That's why that's in the back of my mind, is the way I think I'd lean towards going. But I completely take the point you guys are coming across.
To be fair, you said player X. There'd probably be plenty of Dolphins fans who would start X at quarterback, to be fair. If one of us three was named the backup quarterback, there'd be someone in the crowd chanting for us to go in. Do you know what I mean? Even if it was just the other two on the podcast. You know, I think that's just, like you say, it's human nature. But you kind of want to avoid, I don't know, taking someone in the second round, or taking even like a Mitch Trubisky or someone like that, where there's still going to be a contingent of people who have got hope for a former first round pick saying, yeah, well, I'm sure this guy can still do it. Like, you just want someone who can really game manage, but with the style of players that you've got. It's a case of just don't let the ship sink while the quarterback's away.
I definitely wouldn't go for Trubisky, because that would happen very quickly. No.
Yeah, of course. But that's exactly why I use him as an example, because, you know.
Yeah, straight away you'd get that. Yeah, you literally wouldn't even get to the end of preseason without somebody saying that Trubisky should be the starting quarterback.
Hey, PFN would have it written up. Is it PFN? No, what's the one? Pro Football Talk would have it written up as controversy. Quarterback controversy before the ink had dried on the contract. So
exactly. Right. Coming to the end, unless anyone else wants to kind of raise anything, I've got a big shout out for Si, because Si's doing a Devontae Parker here and stepping up for the team whilst 50%, which is exactly what Devontae Parker does every week, apparently. So thanks for persevering through, mate. And it's always appreciate it. I think it's been a good fun chat. I think we're going to do a lot more of this chat in the next few weeks. You know, the free agency stuff and the draft is always so popular, because it's kind of that time when your opinion could be as good as the sort of Ian Rappaport's of the world, because it's just throwing darts at a dartboard, isn't it? It's a bit like the kind of Football Manager scenario where you play in the Football Manager game and you can kind of like sign who you want, do anything like that. It's all very that's the draw of that sort of thing, isn't it? So the next few weeks will definitely be fun, and as much as we said, we're just here to take people's minds off the other rubbish going on in the world. If we've done that for you today, then leave us a comment, just get involved, but start the conversation on Twitter, etc. as well. So thanks for joining. Appreciate you, the two of you, as always, and speak to you next week, no doubt.